and welcome. This is Trials and Tribulations. I'm Phil Airy, and I've got my two cohorts.
Sarah Owen Hughes.
And me, Faith Douglas.
I've known Pete for about, I think maybe slightly more than, maybe 10 years. And I actually knocked on his front door and made him be my friend.
You did.
Which is slightly alarming. There's no restraining order on me, unbelievably.
Why am I not surprised by that?
Well, I was walking my then small children to school and I saw a polytunnel full of carnivorous plants and I thought, this looks interesting, somebody else who likes plants. And I couldn't resist, so I knocked on the door and went, hello, who are you and what do you do? And to your enormous credit, Pete, you actually sort of chatted to me and allowed me to be your friend. So Pete and his wife Alencia, who's on the stand just behind us, they moved back to Yorkshire, I think about 15 years ago, is that right? From the Netherlands?
Yeah, that's right.
And they're, what started off as a bit of an obsession and a passion...
10 years ago, actually, yeah.
Is it 10?
10 years
yeah.
ago, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, so you must have been freshly back.
We got claustrophobic in Holland and Alencia wanted to come home, she said, even though she's Dutch.
She came home to Yorkshire.
Yeah.
And their passion for carnivorous plants has become more than just a passion now. It's gold medal, Chelsea Flower Show gold medal award winning shows and specialists. He is a passionate breeder and grower of these plants, and he is here for no other reason than to convince Faith that she can actually grow these successfully herself. So
well,
a very, very warm welcome, everyone, for Pete Walker of Wax Wicked Plants, our carnivorous gardener.
Thank you.
Now, Pete, as you know, I've got three now grumpy teenage boys, but when we first met, I had three very small boys, and it's very hard to get children into gardening if they think it's something that their mum does and it's a bit boring. But the one thing I could guarantee they would do was take a Sarracenia, one of the pitcher plants, and we would do an alien autopsy every time the pitchers died back. We would cut them down, slice them open and count how many earwigs were in there. And I found out afterwards my murderous youngest child would say, oh yeah, I put that one in. And they were finding them in the garden and dropping them into the pitchers.
That's dedication,
but that's science. And that's how my boys got into carnivorous plants. How did you get into carnies?
My first ever experience was my boss in Holland when I started on my horticultural journey. He had a Sarracenia flava, a yellow one. I remember looking at it and thinking, oh, I like that. Yeah, it's different. Didn't think any more of it at the time. And then years later, started collecting a few just as a hobby. And obviously the rest's history. It's now become a business. But that was my first ever one, and that's what caught my eye. There was something about them that I liked.
Mm.
Although I didn't really have the space to grow many. So from hobby to obsession to business,
yes. And I hear that you actually moved away from the end of my road, not because of me, but because there wasn't enough room in your garden to grow your business. I'd like that to be on record. It wasn't because
it's
of me.
True. No, it wasn't Sarah's fault. No, we ran out of room. We had a couple of tunnels, as you know, and a greenhouse, and by that time we were full to the rafters. So we thought, well, we'll try get a nursery near my mum and somewhere in Harrogate, but anyone who lives in Harrogate knows the postcode's a bit of a killer. So we knew fairly rapidly we couldn't afford to live or rent or get anything round here nursery-wise. So someone said, try the Stately Homes. So we did a plant fair at Scampston, asked the owner, who very kindly said, well, what do you need? And we said, well, we need a house and some land. And he said, anything else? He said, no.
Brilliant.
And he said, welcome to Scampston. And that were it. So we literally moved, the same month.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we now have a big-ish nursery, still small compared to a lot of the big commercial growers here, but one of the biggest carnivorous nurseries in the north, definitely, yeah. It keeps expanding, despite the wife telling me I can't have any more greenhouses. I still sneak another one in every now and then. So.
Is it like a spring thing, isn't it? Every time I see you online, there's like, oh, we've got a new glasshouse or a new polytunnel, and it's every spring another one's appeared.
Yeah.
And I understand as well from your helpers today that you've got a new irrigation system as well.
Oh, yeah.
Look at that.
We have. Well, we used to water everything with a watering can, which used to take, well, Guy, who's on the stall over there, poor Guy, it used to take him about 4 hours. So if there were two of us doing it, it'd be 2.5 hours on a hot day. Watering can per tray. And of course, we'd always run out of water in the hottest time of the month, so we'd have to run from one end of the nursery to the other with a watering can. It was a nightmare, to be quite honest. So now we've got a water tank, which we collect all our rainwater in. And the guy from our local horticultural supplier, he said he could set us up with an irrigation system, which I didn't believe. He said, well, if it doesn't work, I'll give you your money back. So yeah. I thought, well, that's fair enough. So he did it, and it works. We can water with a lance now. So what used to be 4 hours is half an hour.
Fantastic.
So it's a godsend, it really is.
Because these plants really do need water, don't they? And they really do need rainwater. They can't. Well, you can't just put a load of tap water on them.
Well, Scampston water's really hard, so we can't use it. Plus, they're on a meter, and I don't, you know, we don't want to go down that
road.
Take
the life from Yorkshire.
So we've collected all winter, pumped it into the big new tank, and now we just use that. Yeah, it's fantastic. It's been, well, it's transformed how we work.
Yeah.
And my arms were getting that long with the watering cans. It's been brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
And to take a slight step back, because there might be some people who don't actually know, what is a carnivorous plant, and is it actually carnivorous?
It's carnivorous to the point it's not going to eat.
It's not going to eat
cows
ham sandwich,
and sheep or anything like that. But
insectivorous.
Would they if they were bigger though?
There are some in the wild of the tropical varieties that will eat rats and mice and birds and large mammals. But ours, it's wasps, hornets, about the largest things they'll eat. So insectivorous, I suppose, is the better description. But the cluster's carnivorous, yeah. And the reason they're carnivorous is because in the wild where they live, there's no nutrients in the soil for them where they're growing. So they've had to adapt to catch their own nutrients.
Where are they native to?
It varies. They're all over the world, including in this country. We've got several in this country as well. The ones we've got here, we've got some sundews from Australia, from the Venus flytraps are from North America. The Sarracenias, which we specialise in, are all North American. So they're all hardy. But there are tropical varieties that we sell. There are various temperate varieties as well. It's a huge range of plants, to be quite honest.
Yeah. But,
we grow the hardy ones because we're tight and we don't want to spend any money on heating them, technically.
But they are incredible. Again, you know, I've killed a few, I'll be honest. We've killed a few over the years, not as many as Faith has.
Every single one.
I'm watching you.
I've said don't sell me anymore because it's a death sentence, you know it is.
But
there are some rules to stick to with them, but in reality, once you've got the knack of growing them, and I will explain in the finer details to you what to do, but in reality, drown them in rainwater and full sun for most of the ones we sell, and you won't go far wrong.
And your wife, Helen, she gave me an amazing tip about 5 years ago, because she said, you know, gardening needs to be fun and also reasonably low maintenance. You know, if you're a busy person, you haven't got time to faff around with fussy plants. And she said, well, I need to introduce you to the wine saver. And I remember thinking, what on earth is the wine saver? Because I don't save wine. I enjoy wine. I don't save it.
Yeah.
And so she showed me how to plant up. And I've got a big glass bowl that I've planted up with Sarracenia, the pitcher plants. And I just leave it out in the garden all year round. And it's hardy to minus 15, so the glass will burst before the plants die.
Yeah.
In the summer, I do top it up with rainwater. But I put it on the table in the garden in the summer, and all the flies in the district get attracted into it, and I can enjoy my wine in peace without any added protein. And it's absolutely perfect. I cut out the brown stems when they die back and then put it in full sun, and it is super.
It's as simple as that, yeah.
It's because we're overthinking it. We're trying to love the plants too much, Faith.
Well, the first thing I was doing was keeping them inside.
Right. You can with some, yeah.
The second thing I was doing was not watering them.
Not watering them can be fatal. If you imagine in the wild...
Isn't it? Water your plants.
In the wild, they're growing in bogs and swamps, so it's like the bog's been drained.
Yeah.
Then they're going to... Yeah. Obviously, they're not going to do well. But providing you can, certainly in the summer, drown them.
Yeah.
There is no overwatering. Yeah. If you're prone to overwatering plants, then grow these.
These are perfect,
So my house is actually, during the winter, it's a very old, cold house. And during the winter, I've got log burners. That's how I heat my house. So spring, summer's usually a good time for a plant in my house. Mm-hmm. As soon as those log burners get switched on, the air just dries up. So
would you
spray them?
I would recommend sticking them outside.
So over winter?
Yeah, them outside. If it's Sarracenias and the hardy sundews, that type of thing. Obviously, there are tropical varieties that wouldn't take those temperatures, but the majority of what we grow is on an unheated nursery, so if it's cold, they're cold.
So maybe I try again.
Be brave.
I think we're convincing her, aren't we?
They're
I
all Yorkshireised, are these?
They're not, all Yorkshireised.
These soft plants here, honestly. These are all tough.
And what I love, I mean, they all have these amazing adaptations because they've got very poor roots because they're growing in these normally peat bogs.
Mm-hmm.
You're now growing them peat-free. That's
we're trialing peat-free. I can't say we've gone completely peat-free because I'm finding peat-free can be slightly prohibitive as well in that the cost's a lot higher. And finding the right mix is proving to be a challenge. Yeah. And from growing from seed is the main bugbear. Yeah. If you'll pardon the pun. Peat is a great growing medium, obviously. Mm. But
And it's where they grow naturally as well.
That's where they
would grow
naturally.
So that's going to be a challenge for you.
Yeah.
But these ones here are all peat free.
These are all in peat free. We thought we'd struggle with, for example, sundews and Venus flytraps. But as you can see...
So these are the sundews at the front, for those that don't know.
This is a fork-leaved sundew.
They're very pretty.
That's been all winter in an unheated polytunnel. And you can see it's come back beautiful. That's grown in coir chunks.
Okay. Ah.
So this is a new one on us.
Yeah.
We grow Saracenias like this one in pine bark, perlite.
So that is?
That's that one, yeah. And that's really easy to grow. I find maybe the root development on this particular mix isn't as good as the coir chunks. But as I say, there is a price tag attached to peat free. Because coir doesn't grow in this country, obviously. It's not.
It's got to be shipped.
It's harvested in Sri Lanka and these type of places and then imported. So,
the
peat debate's going to rumble on, I think.
Yeah. Mm. What I love about those as well is because the leaves, the adapted leaves, are there to trap the insects for nutrition, the flowers raise right above them for pollination because they don't want the pollinators to fall into the pitchers. And I think that's really beautiful. So when they flower, it's always quite surprising. And some of the pinguiculas, the little ones that you have, the flowers last forever, but are way out. If you do come up at the end, the Saracenias, those flowers smell of really sweet honey, which is quite a surprise. So that's a spring flower for your bog garden that's hardy in North Yorkshire. And it makes an amazing cut flower as well. And you have
do,
vases
yeah,
of them,
yeah.
don't you, normally
yeah, we
on your
do.
Stand?
Well, when the pandemic was on, we had thousands of flowers.
Yeah.
Nowhere to go.
Yeah.
So we put bowls of them in the village, great big tubs of flowers in the village, and people had come and collect them. And we caught one guy on a bike. He'd be about back and forth about four or five times a day with his rucksack filling them up. So we thought, well, we'll try and sell the flowers.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the States, they go for $1 a stem.
Wow.
So we thought, well, we're missing something here. So I've rung a guy this morning, actually, at Covent Garden, and he said, send us a sample. And
wow.
This is a tip from Jonathan Mosley, the florist.
Yeah.
He said, I've got some people who I know, so we'll send some to London. And we did sell a lot last year to a designer, a floral designer. And she used them in magazines and whatever. Yeah. I don't know what she did with them. But, I think we're missing out on the beautiful flowers.
Stunning.
I mean, they come in all colours, not just yellows. The ones in our display are all yellow, but we have reds, whites, pinks, oranges.
Yeah.
And they are a good cut flower,
Yeah.
But as you were saying, with the flower being miles away, when this flowers, it's up here.
Yeah.
For that very reason, that it doesn't catch all its own pollinators.
And that has a British form that's found on peat boglands in the UK. So that there is a form of that that's a British native.
We've got three sundews in this country and two butterworts, I believe.
Yeah.
That are native. And bladderworts, which we cannot grow for some reason. But the butterworts are the butterworts and sundews. Yeah, they're really easy to grow. And obviously they're native, so they don't need any protection. Just leave them outside.
So how do they catch their insects? How do they catch their food? Is that sticky?
It's like super glue.
Right.
So if you touch them like that, you can see.
Yeah.
Imagine being a fly stuck
yeah.
to that. It's a bit grim, but, you know, plants got to
They've
eat.
They've got to eat. They do. They have to eat. And obviously the Venus flytraps.
The Venus flytraps snaps shut.
Yeah.
That's like a mouse trap, I suppose.
Yeah.
There's little hairs in the middle. If they touch two of the hairs within a certain time frame, then plant puts the energy into snapping closed.
And this one here, what do they?
The Saracenias are attracted to nectar around the tip of the pitcher, so you can just see some open. There's an open pitcher there. Look, so at the top of there.
Oh yeah.
that's dripping with nectar on a hot day. These are just forming, so they haven't opened yet. This is last year's. This has been out all winter, freezing, absolutely frozen.
Amazing, isn't it?
They then get drugged by the nectar and fall inside, and that's then a
meal
for the plant.
Yeah. Lovely.
Yeah.
There are worse ways to go, aren't there? Get knocked out by the scent of the nectar and drown in a drunken stupor.
Yeah. I mean, they do go into a trance you can see it. If you see us at an outdoor show, we've got great big tall pictures. If you see a wasp or a bluebottle land on top, you can literally
stroke them. See it getting drunk, yeah.
You can stroke them. No, I wouldn't recommend stroking wasps. I think weird, but you can, you know.
It's a bit weird.
That's worse than knocking on a neighbour or anything.
Yeah,
a bit weird.
I'll maybe take that statement
Yeah,
back.
That's worse than knocking on a neighbour's door and forcing them to be your friend, isn't it, Pete?
No, I'll say no more.
And finally, how does it feel to be a Premier Gold Award winner again?
Well done.
We were quite pleased with that.
Look at his face. Oh, thoroughly, thoroughly well deserved. It's been such a pleasure over the years to see you grow and develop from being a keen gardener to being this amazing, award-winning, innovative, carnivorous gardener.
Thank you.
Everyone, thank you very, very much for Pete Walker from Wax Wicked Plants.
Thanks, Pete.
Well, that's it. Thanks for listening. That's been another edition of Trials and Tribulations. Now, if you liked it, please subscribe and follow. But until next time, keep it green.